You're listening to the micro version of the Savage Lovecast, www.savagelovecast.com.
If you're stuck in a relationship quandary, or if you're looking for sexual harmony, well, there's nothing you can't ask on the Savage Lovecast.
There's something I want you to do, but first, Whitmer. Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer. I talked about her once before, got her last name wrong, and got yelled at online, very nearly canceled. I'm not going to make that same mistake again. Whitmer, Whitmer, Whitmer. I've been practicing. So here's the thing. I want you to yell at Governor Gretchen Whitmer. Now, a lot of terrible people have been yelling at Governor Whitmer lately, and for very stupid reasons. Remember those images of gun-toting assholes who stormed a state capitol and threatened to hang a democratically elected governor? That was Michigan, and Whitmer was on the receiving end of all those death threats. Quick digression. The feds did nothing. Donald Trump did not send goons to Michigan, but a few bearded artisanal donut shop baristas looked sideways at a federal building in Portland, and the first airborne is dispatched. Anyway, I want you to yell at Governor Whitmer for a good reason, a legit reason, a just-as-injustice reason. Tell Governor Whitmer to free Michael Thompson. Thompson sold some pot to a police informant in 1994. He was arrested, and when the police searched his home, they found two guns, his wife's gun, which she owned legally, and an antique. Because of the guns, Thompson was hit with an enhanced charge and sentenced to 60 years in prison for selling someone a little weed when he did not have a gun on him and no one got shot or killed. And he's already been in prison now for 25 years. For selling weed, and he has got 30 more years to go on his sentence. He's also been infected with coronavirus recently. He's 68 years old. He has diabetes. And unless Governor Whitmer commutes his sentence, he's at high risk of dying in prison, not decades from now, hours or days from now. And he's already served 25 fucking years for selling pot. The average time served in the United States for murder, less than 13 years, according to the Department of Justice. And if that's not enough to make you mad, how about this? Michigan legalized recreational marijuana in 2018. So Michael Thompson is currently rotting in prison and may die in prison for selling pot in a state where it is no longer illegal to sell pot. There's been a showy push in some states where recreational pot use has been legalized to clear the records of people who were arrested and charged and sometimes convicted for having pot on them for personal use, for possession. The politicians who back these efforts, Democrats for the most part, like Whitmer, have said that no one should have a criminal arrest or conviction on their records for something that is no longer a crime. And possession of pot for personal use, for recreational use, no longer a crime in many states. But these politicians who make this argument about possession don't follow it to its logical conclusion. It's not just possession that is no longer a crime. It is no longer a crime to sell pot or grow pot. And yet there are people out there right now, people like Michael Thompson, rotting in prison for selling or growing pot. And they should be released, and they should have their records cleared, and they should be compensated. They should be, to the best of the state's ability, made whole with some of the money the states are currently raking in now that they're taxing legal weed. Like so many men and women who are prosecuted and imprisoned because of the war on drugs, Michael Thompson is black. And his life, what's left of it, matters. If you've been out there in the streets protesting for black lives, take a moment to send an email to Governor Whitmer, because Michael Thompson's life matters. Governor Whitmer has marched in BLM protests in Michigan and Detroit. She's condemned the inequities faced by black people in her state and around the country. And here is an inequity, here is an injustice that she has the power to do something about, and she has been asked to do something about since she was sworn in. And you know what? She's likely to do something about it, finally, I think, I hope, if she hears from you. So, sign the petition at freemichaelthompson.com. You can also send a letter to Governor Whitmer via that website, and you can call Governor Whitmer's office at 517-373-3400. Again, that's 517-373-3400. And tell Governor Whitmer, ask Governor Whitmer nicely. You're not an asshole. Don't be an asshole. She's not an asshole. She just needs to act. Tell Governor Whitmer to free Michael Thompson. All right, coming up on today's show, on the micro edition of the Savage Lovecast, tons of your Q's, lots of my A's, and on the magnum edition of the Savage Lovecast, Mistress Velvet, a pro-dom from Chicago, joins us to talk about some very interesting work that she is doing with her clients there. That is on the magnum, which is twice as much show, no ads, more guests, more calls, that you can subscribe to at savagelovecast.com. All that coming up today. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by omgyes.com, a website devoted to women's pleasure. Check it out and get a discount when you go to omgyes.com/savage. Today's episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by Dirty Diana, a new sex-positive fictional podcast starring Demi Moore and created by Shauna Festa. It's a show for all of us who are craving connection and searching for a new kind of erotica. Check it out at qcodemedia.com. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by DoorDash. Get $5 off your first order when you download the DoorDash app from the App Store and enter the promo code SAVAGE.
Hey, Dan, I have a quarantine success story for you. I'm a married 40-something gay man, and COVID-19 inspired us to try something new recently. Before we left the house, I asked my husband to shoot his load on the inside of my quarantine face mask. Later, I wore that mask to the grocery store and talked to folks as usual. It was hot for my husband to know his load was all over my face, mouth, and chin the whole time. And it was hot for me, too. I took a deep whiff of his pungent manly cum as I walked down the aisles, picking our produce and everyday food for the week. Eggs, milk, cucumbers, Crisco. It was intoxicating. It was euphoric, and it was sexy. It was crazy seeing anxious people were panic buying around me. Karens were arguing with employees about their privilege to not wear a mask. I found myself rather enjoying my mask. It was relaxing. I couldn't believe it. In the center of it all, I was calmly inhaling my husband. That was my privilege. I realized that the musk of a batch of my husband's fresh milk cum is a lot like the smell of a batch of fresh baked Toll House cookies. A delicious, familiar aroma that reminds me of the warmth, love, comfort, and safety of home.
Thank you for calling and sharing. And your story, so evocatively told, reminded me of a story of mine that I'm going to share really quickly here at the top of the show. I had a boyfriend many years ago whose cum smelled exactly like camembert cheese, which we didn't know because this was a long time ago. We hadn't yet had camembert cheese, but we were together at a dinner party in France and they served us some camembert cheese and we were just staring at each other, dumbstruck, cumstruck, as we ate what tasted exactly like his cum and watched everybody else at the table do the same. All right, we are starting every week's show with sex success stories or quarantine hot success stories. You know, we deal with a lot of people's problems and troubles and strife, and it's always nice to kick off the show on a positive note before we get into the weeds, into the trouble. If you want us to share yours at the top of the show, give us a call, and who knows, maybe your dirty sex story will dislodge one of my own.
Hi, Dan. I'm a straight cis man living in Northern California. My girlfriend and I are planning on heading up to the Northwest to visit my parents for my mom's birthday. We're going to get tested beforehand and drive up and take all precautions. Well, I'm also hoping to visit some of my friends up there in a socially distant and safe way. But that's where I'm having some issues with my girlfriend. Basically, one of my friends has been exhibiting off and on COVID-like symptoms for months now, and she has gotten tested twice, has tested negative both times. However, she's worried that she might still have COVID and be one of these long hauler cases. I am less concerned than my girlfriend is about going and seeing her in a socially distant and safe manner. But that's where we've had a little bit of friction. And it's gotten to the point where my girlfriend has said that she might consider not going if I keep insisting on seeing my friends. I wanted to get your take on what you think about relationships where people have different criteria or risk assessments or boundaries when it comes to being exposed to COVID.
Call me conservative, and some people do, but I think you might want to err on the side of not killing your parents when you drive up to visit mom on her birthday, there are certain hardwired risks in what you're planning. You can get tested before you leave, and then you have to drive. I don't know how many dozens or hundreds of miles or how many states you're traversing, but you have to drive there, and there's a risk of exposure along the way, even if you take every precaution. There's also a risk of exposing yourself if you see a bunch of friends while you're home visiting your parents and then return to your parents. There's your friend who has had a couple of negative tests but is exhibiting symptoms. There are a lot of false negative tests. It's not outside the realm of mathematical possibility that your friend is asymptomatic or symptomatic and carrying and spreading the virus and has had two false negative tests in a row. That said, if you see your friends, if you want to see your friends, and everyone is masked up and stays 6 feet away from each other, and you are outside, the risk of contracting the virus and then taking it home and killing your parents is very, very low. One of the things we know now about the virus is that it is spread primarily indoors in enclosed spaces where people are exhaling and rebreathing each other's exhalations, and the risk of exposure outside in the great outdoors is minor. So what your friends are doing when they meet outside is already much lower risk for transmission than gathering together inside, like some of the idiots I've seen in restaurants here in Seattle lately. But it still carries a risk. Now, you can structure your visit in a way that might make your girlfriend feel a little better, where you're going to hang out with your parents for a couple of days, and then you're not going to see your parents anymore on this trip, and you're going to see your friends outside, masked up, 6 feet away from them. Perhaps that would mollify your girlfriend or address her concerns. And you can also tell your girlfriend, but this might persuade her not to go on the trip at all, that the real risk, the much more acute risk, is driving with you to the Pacific Northwest from wherever you are and the incidental exposures you might encounter along the way. Travel is inherently risky. Are you going to be staying in hotels or are you going to be camping? There's a way to minimize, mitigate, even eliminate the risks on this trip. But the trip itself is probably riskier than getting together with your friends after you're done visiting your parents in the park, masked up, with everyone staying 6 feet away from each other. OMGYes.com is a website devoted to women's sexual pleasure. In partnership with Indiana University and Kinsey Institute researchers, OMGYes has interviewed and surveyed thousands of women about what's made their pleasure better. Physical techniques, psychological techniques, and ways of guiding partners so they can experience more pleasure. The findings at OMGYes.com are peer-reviewed and published, so this is science. And all this research and all these data are brought to life in fun, honest videos featuring regular women sharing from their own experiences about what works for them. I've watched a bunch of the videos at OMGYes.com, and they are great, and I can see why they are so helpful and such a valuable resource to so many women. One thing their research at OMGYes.com has found is how easy it is for us to blunt our own explorations when we think things like, I've already got techniques that work for me, I'm good. But finding out what works for other people can help you find new things, additional things that work for you and expand your pleasure. There's always more to learn and more to explore. And here's something I really love about OMGYes. It is not a subscription. Each batch of content is a one-time payment, like buying a book, and you keep it forever. And your contribution goes on to fund future pleasure research. Learn more at OMGYes.com. Our listeners get a discount at OMGYes.com/savage. Support the Lovecast. Expand your own pleasure by going to OMGYes.com/savage.
Hi, Dan. I'm a 24-year-old queer woman from the Midwest who is dating a 21-year-old queer man, also from the Midwest. And next month, we are planning on moving to Chicago together, which is really exciting. So we'll get to quarantine together, all that good stuff. However, one issue just makes me a little anxious, and that is I know he will want to participate in the Black Lives Matter protests that are going on in Chicago. We both care deeply about this issue. We protested in some smaller local protests together. You know, we both donated. The thing is, the Chicago protests are much bigger in scale. And honestly, I'm just kind of concerned about COVID risk. If it wasn't for COVID, I would, you know, I'd love to participate and be super gung-ho. But in this new apartment, I'm going to be the only income owner for both of us, and I'm a freelancer. So if I get sick, like we literally have no income coming in, which is really scary. And he's a student, so if he gets sick, like, you know, college moves really fast, like he'll be behind. And none of our families out there, we're not going to have a support network. I don't know. It just makes me really anxious, and I don't want to tell him not to go. I feel like I don't want to control him, but I also feel like we should be on the same page about COVID risk. I don't know. Am I over exaggerating? Are the protests not really what was risky? How do you think I should have this conversation?
Headline: CNN, June 24th, 2020. Black Lives Matter protests have not led to a spike in coronavirus cases, research says. A lot of people shared this concern. We had this concern about the right-wing Open the States Up protests in Michigan and other states, the assholes carrying guns, threatening the lives of elected officials, about which Bob Barr did nothing, didn't send in the thugs to arrest those protesters in Michigan with their rifles and their death threats, but did send in the federal thugs to harass, beat up, and arrest peaceful protesters in Portland. Anyway, that's a digression. The protests, the BLM protests, people have been wearing masks, and the protests are, as we just said to the previous caller, outside, and the virus is not efficiently spread outside. So long as your boyfriend, if he wants to go to the protest, or you want to go to the protest together, so long as you're masked up and you try to maintain as best you can during the march about 6 feet of distance, which isn't that hard when it's a march on the move and not a group of people crowding together against, say, a police line at a federal building in Portland, your risk of contracting the virus is very, very low. It is not non-existent. The only safe sex is the sex you don't have. Remember that from 1984, everybody? No, you don't. Google it. The only safe, totally safe, perfectly safe, no risk at all protest is the one you don't go to. And so if you are 100% risk averse, if you can't tolerate any risk at all, then you shouldn't go to the protest. And if you can't tolerate any risk, sort of knock on risk from your boyfriend going to the protest, he shouldn't go either. But I don't think you want to exaggerate the risks of going to the protest, considering what we now know about these protests have been going on for months, and they are not a vector for COVID. Wear your mask, hang back a little bit, you will be safe. You will also be safe from usually arrest and violence if you're not at the very front of the protest, or you go to the protest during the day. And there are ways to support the protests and the protesters without going to the protests. I have friends who are immunocompromised who couldn't go to the protests. They made a bunch of signs, and then they dropped them off at the protest for other people who could be at the protest. You can contribute to bail funds for protesters if you guys can spare the money. And you can amplify the voices of protesters on social media. There are ways for you to support the protests without going. But the risk of going, so long as you are masked up and outside, are very low. I want to recommend another podcast I know you will like. Dirty Diana is a new sex-positive fictional podcast starring Demi Moore and created by Shauna Festa. The 6-episode series follows Diana as she balances her crumbling marriage and a suffocating job at a boys' club financial firm while secretly running a website which publishes women's deepest desires and fantasies. With the arrival of an intriguing new client, Diana's two worlds come crashing together. Dirty Diana is a show for all of us who are craving connection and searching for a new kind of erotica. Subscribe today wherever you find your favorite shows and check out qcodemedia.com for more info. Presented by Dipsy.
Hi, Dan. I'm a 29-year-old, mostly straight, cis woman. And my problem is this. I hate giving blowjobs. I have always hated giving them. And I think the main reason I hate giving them is they are painful for me. I have a TMJ disorder, which is, I think, actually pretty common among people where one side of your jaw pops pretty much every time it opens, and there's some chronic strain and pain associated with that. So it's really uncomfortable for me to have my jaw open for long periods of time, like when I'm going down on a guy. However, you know, for me on the receiving end, oral sex is like the best thing ever. And so it's frustrating for me to so not enjoy it on the giving end. So I guess I'm wondering, are there like things I can be doing to lessen the stress on my jaw as I'm going through the motions? Or like, is there some mental way to kind of like push past it or whatever? It's just, I enjoy giving other people pleasure, and it's hard for me to
not enjoy what I consider a pretty essential part of sex life. If there's not a way around the physical sort of discomfort, do I just like suck it up, no pun intended, because it is that important to me and usually to the people I date? Or do I just say like, no, I'm not going to do that, and then, you know, resign myself to only dating people who are okay with that, which would probably be pretty slim, since I know for me, like if a guy ever said he didn't do oral, like that would kind of be a deal breaker.
The temporomandibular joint is the hinge, basically, where the jaw attaches to the skull. And people with TMJ disorders of that joint, experience pain, opening their mouths for long periods of time, chewing, giving blowjobs. It's a legitimate, basically, outpass. You don't have to do this thing that causes you pain. You would like to do this thing. You would love to do this thing. You'd love to give oral sex. You'd love to suck that dick for hours on end, but you physically can't without causing yourself pain. And you shouldn't date any dude who can't wrap his head around that. Now, there are ways to get creative and simulate to the best of your abilities some of that oral sex experience for your partner after he goes down on you for hours. I would recommend getting a silicone cock sheath. It's kind of like a kind of bulbous, fat-looking tube that wraps around the dick that you can move up and down the dick, and it will create kind of the sensations of getting a blowjob, and then just concentrate your attentions orally on the head of the dick. You know, you don't have to open your mouth very far. You can just like produce a lot of saliva and keep the cock sheath moving up and down his dick while sucking with your jaw pretty much closed, using your lips and tonguing a little bit the head of the dick, and you will be down there face down in his lap. It will, if he closes his eyes or you slap a blindfold on him, feel very similar to getting a blowjob. There are also guys out there who love to eat pussy, and it's not necessarily transactional for them. They're not eating your pussy in exchange for the blowjob that you're going to give them. They eat your pussy because it's their favorite thing and they love eating pussy. And if a guy is down for eating your pussy, loves eating your pussy for himself because it turns him on, and he's not hung up on or invested in oral being perfectly reciprocal, take that fucking yes for an answer. Date that guy. Date those guys, and then find one or two of those guys to marry. Let yourself off the hook. Don't guilt trip yourself about this. You have a legit medical condition. Makes it hard for you to suck dick. So you are not obligated to suck dick. While it may not be safe to eat in restaurants right now, you can continue to support restaurants in your community safely. There are thousands of restaurants open for delivery on DoorDash right now that need your patronage to survive. Now more than ever, support your favorite restaurants on DoorDash. DoorDash is the app that brings food you're craving to you at your door right now. And ordering is easy. Just open the DoorDash app, choose what you want to eat, and your food will be left safely outside your door with the new contactless delivery drop-off setting. With over 300,000 partners in the U.S., Puerto Rico, Canada, and Australia, you can support your local go-tos or choose from your favorite national restaurants. Many of your favorite local restaurants are still open for delivery. Help them stay open by opening the DoorDash app, selecting your favorite local restaurant, and getting your food delivered to you, left for you safely at your door. Again, DoorDash deliveries are now contactless to keep the communities they operate in safe. And right now, our listeners can get up to $5 off and zero delivery fees on their first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app and enter the code SAVAGE. That's $5 off and zero delivery fees on your first order when you download the DoorDash app in the App Store and enter the code SAVAGE. Don't forget, use the code SAVAGE for $5 off your first order, no delivery fees, with DoorDash.
Hi, Dan. I am calling from the Rocky Mountains. I'm in a weird family situation. I found out that my sister-in-law's husband has been cheating on her, and I'm not sure if I should tell her or not. I feel like I'm making a decision for her, whether I keep this information to myself or I tell her what I know. My sister-in-law and her husband have been married for 10 years. They have 2 kids under the age of 8, and she's a stay-at-home mom and is totally financially dependent on him. They moved to our town a year ago to be closer to family, but he kept a place to stay in the state they moved from and has continued to work there since the move. He has a well-paying job there and lives where he works most of the time. He visits his wife and kids here for about a week every month or two. They've been having some trouble with their marriage in the last year, and things hit a tipping point in February or March. He can be a heavy drinker, and he's been known to say some pretty inconsiderate things when he drinks. My sister-in-law started venting to a guy friend of hers around that time, and when her husband found out about that, he got pretty upset. He accused her of cheating, and I don't really know the extent of the relationship that she had with this friend of hers, but as far as I know, he was just someone that she could talk to about her problems. Her husband hopped on a dating app around that time and actually ended up trying to start something with a close friend of mine who I've been friends with since fourth grade. He told her that if his wife got to have a boyfriend behind his back, then he got to have a secret girlfriend too. Then he told her that he's had a crush on her since they met at my wedding 7 years ago. He flirted with her and vented about his marriage. He also said some weird things about my sister-in-law involving some illicit drug use, which I haven't seen any evidence of on a daily basis, at least. Certainly not to the extent that he was describing in his messages to my friend. He also told her that he's been messing around with other girls for a while at his place that he has out of state. The whole thing was just strange, and my friend wasn't sure how to tell me until recently. Since this all happened, my sister-in-law and her husband have been going to counseling, and things do seem better between the two of them. I don't know what they've disclosed to one another. I don't know the terms of their relationship. I don't know if he's still seeing other women. I don't know if my sister-in-law would or would not want to know any of this. Just looking for some perspective. I love her very much, and I just want to do right by her.
You say that you love your sister-in-law very much. What you don't say is that your sister-in-law confides in you. There was some other friend, a male friend, that she was confiding in. Her husband thought that they were fucking. You don't think that your sister-in-law is capable of cheating. Spoiler alert, a lot of people we don't think are capable of cheating cheat. That's how people get away with cheating. Anyway, she hasn't asked you for your advice. She hasn't asked you for your input, I assume. She's not confiding in you. And so I wonder whether it would be wise for you to burst in with what you know, because your sister-in-law's husband was so reckless as to hit on a friend of yours who eventually confided in you about what your sister-in-law's husband had told her. You have now the burden of knowledge. And the question is, do you shift that burden onto your sister-in-law's shoulders? They have two young kids. Your sister-in-law is financially dependent on her husband. Post-divorce, she will still be financially dependent on her husband. He can still pay her child support and alimony. He can still support her. So it's not like, should the relationship end, your sister-in-law and her kids will be on the street. But it certainly would be disruptive if, you know, the shit hit the fan, or your sister-in-law were to find out, you know, something she may have already suspected. They are living apart 7 weeks out of eight. I would, in that circumstance, assume that maybe my partner was doing whatever they needed to do to stay married and stay sane under those circumstances if I were in a monogamous marriage, which I'm not and never will be. But given those circumstances, 7 out of 8 weeks, both of them out of each other's sight, both of them on their own, one of them doing all of the childcare and all of the household labor, I would just assume that we weren't spending all that time alone necessarily, and perhaps we had entered a period of our marriage where sexual exclusivity, emotional exclusivity wasn't a defining characteristic if we were not actually estranged from one another given those circumstances. And maybe those circumstances were imposed. But you say your sister made this choice to move closer to you guys, home to family, and her husband's job keeps him away. Maybe that's was by design. Maybe your sister-in-law wanted to be away from her husband more. Maybe your husband engineered that after the fact. I don't know. I think you should suss out your sister-in-law before you decide whether to tell her what you know. If you have a conversation with her, you know that they're in counseling. If you have a conversation with her about how things are going and you are empathetic and concerned, you may find out from that conversation that things are much better now, that the counseling is working, that they're putting some things that they both did behind them. There may be a tacit acknowledgement in that circumspect conversation that your sister-in-law knows and might not, you know, sometimes a person knows that they've been cheated on, and knowing that other people know compounds the hurt because it brings this other dimension of humiliation or perceiving others pitying you or thinking you're a fool for staying in the marriage, and that can compound the pain. And you may not, after sussing her out for a little bit, want to compound the pain. Other people's marriages are mysteries to us. Sometimes people cheat and then they pull out of it and then they do better and then they recommit to their marriage and the marriage survives and it's good for both partners in that marriage that it survives, good for their children, good for their extended families that the marriage survives, but the revelation of the infidelity would have made it impossible for the marriage to survive. So sometimes, just from a utilitarian perspective, it is better for the person who was cheated on never to find out and not to know. And sometimes for that, all of that good to come from it, the people recommitting to each other, falling back in love with each other, committing to parenting under one roof together, committing to staying together, it is better for that person to not know, and better for the person who was cheated on, for the people in their life who may know that they were cheated on, to keep their mouths shut eternally. This isn't about protecting a serial adulterer. This isn't about protecting someone who's putting someone you love at risk. If you can determine that that's not the case, that he's not a serial adulterer, even if there was this period where he was messing around a little bit because it seemed to him the marriage was falling apart, if there's no information that you have at hand that he is behaving in a reckless way, putting her health at risk or the kids at risk, I would err on the side of staying the fuck out of it.
Hi, Dan. I'm a 30-something straight cis female living on the West Coast. About a year ago, my sister found a pair of my dirty underwear in a Ziploc bag in something she called her husband's jack-off bag. She confronted him, and under duress, he admitted they were mine. He then blamed me, claiming we had hooked up years ago, and since then, he's had a weird thing for me. This is totally untrue, and thankfully, my sister didn't believe him. He also admitted that he's had an obsession with women's panties since he was a teenager, and that he took mine impulsively while alone in my apartment. I understand that a panty kink is common, and I try to be GGG and kink positive, but what he did feels like a violation. My sister has asked me not to tell our parents, which I agreed to, but this leaves me in a vulnerable position since they continue to include him in family gatherings and holidays. I've seen him a couple of times since, but we haven't spoken. My question is about what I should do next. Recently, when I talked to my sister, she asked me to forgive him and be the bigger person. But the thought of seeing him makes me feel physically sick. Knowing he was using my underwear for possibly months to get off while acting like a loving brother-in-law to my face. Am I overreacting, or is it not that big of a deal? Should I say fuck it and tell my parents? Should I confront him? Or should I just forgive and forget for my sister's sake?
So this is a really fucked up situation.
Yeah, I agree.
I could almost get past, I could almost see if, you know, the shoes were on the other feet or the panties were on the other bottom. I could almost see forgiving my brother-in-law for something like this. Not that I don't think any of my brother-in-laws would ever steal my tattered old American Apparel underpants. You know, because sometimes people get inappropriate crushes. Sometimes, you know, there is almost an OCD-ish element to some people's obsessions with things like panties. There's no promise from the universe that people who are related to us by blood might not be into us as well, as creepy as that is to think about, right? Mm-hmm. And if your brother-in-law had just been, you know, secretly perving on a pair of your panties that he absconded with, yeah, it's a violation that you know about it. It's a violation that he did it. It's a, you know, he risked making you feel violated by doing it in the first place if he got caught. What really, I listened to your call a couple of times, and what I really stumble on is the accusation that he made that you had slept with him, that you had slept with your sister's husband, and so it was your fault that he was sexually obsessed with you. It was your fault that he stole his underwear. He really, in that moment, to protect himself instead of taking any responsibility. And he hasn't apologized to him, to you himself. He's never taken responsibility. Your sister is the one asking you to forgive him. He's not asking you for forgiveness. But in that moment when he got caught, he tried to nuke your relationship with your sister.
Yeah, no, totally. And that was, you know, part of what I was hung up on for sure, was just that that was his go-to. You know, originally, like, he was mad at her for going through his stuff.
That was his first reaction, was like, you know, you're snooping on my stuff. And I mean, it was in their apartment that they share. And she was like cleaning up and found this bag that he calls, or she calls, his jack-off bag. Mm-hmm. And like has, you know, tools and stuff like that, like stuff he uses. And then, you know, my underwear in a Ziploc bag. And like, so I think, you know, yeah, just like, I mean, just really creepy in general. And then
why did he tell your sister that they were your underwear?
So he didn't. So she called me and thought he was cheating on her, was like, I found these underwear, you know, cause me and her are really close.
Mm-hmm.
And so then she started describing them and I realized that they were mine. And I was like, you know, I asked my husband, like, have you seen these underwear? You know, because of course I don't keep an inventory of my underwear.
Uh-huh. Well, you didn't used to. I bet you do now. I would now if I were
shoes. Sure. Yeah. Well, we moved cities, so he doesn't live by us anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So I have some peace of mind there. But yeah, so we and her figured out that they were mine. So then when she initially confronted him, he, you know, denied, and then finally...
Accused. Denied. Accused. You of having fucked him after they were married, I assume? That it was an accusation that you fucked your sister? Okay, before they were married?
Yes, yeah. This was before they were dating. All of us were friends.
Mm-hmm.
And me and my sister actually lived with him for like 6 months, just like while we were all friends. He had a big house. So he was saying, you know, yeah, I think it was before... her and him started dating that me and him had hooked up, which, yeah, it was so untrue. And it's just like, I mean, and like I said, I mean, she didn't believe him, but yeah.
So it's not as bad as I thought it was. I thought he had accused you of fucking him after your sister married him. Or you had had an affair with her, that you fucked the sister's husband. But it's still deflecting responsibility. Like, you should tell your sister, maybe I can get to a point where I can forgive him. My relationship will never be what it was. I will never feel comfortable or safe around him or want him in my space or my house. But if I'm going to get to a place where I can, you know, forgive him and we can have a damaged relationship that limps along at family gatherings, he has to ask for forgiveness. He has to apologize to me, not you. He has to take some responsibility.
And he has texted me maybe like a 2 months after it happened. It was because it happened right before Thanksgiving.
Oh my God. Of course it did. Because Thanksgivings aren't awful enough. just on their own terms. There's always some like shitty family crap that like comes out, you know, the second or third week of November because Thanksgiving isn't stressful enough. The universe conspires with always to make Thanksgiving as terrible as it possibly can be.
Yes, exactly. So it was like right before all the family stuff. And so he did text me a couple weeks after and said like he was sorry that, you know, and he is going to make it up to me. And I responded and I told him that, you know, I wasn't in a place where I felt like I could really move on or talk to him. You know, I just felt so violated.
Mm-hmm. So the question then becomes, what are you willing to endure for your sister? Mm-hmm. Out of loyalty to your sister? I think instead of having a conversation with her about how he needs to ask for forgiveness, but I think he needs to ask again and maybe ask face to face. You need to have a conversation with your sister about why she is staying with this guy. You know, what's on the plus side of the ledger that makes her, despite the lies and, you know, the thing for panties and the thing for you and, you know, violating her sister, why she's choosing to stay in this relationship. And relationships are complicated and messy. And, you know, it's easy to tell people to get out of relationships with people who've done a creepy, terrible thing. But extricating yourself from a relationship, you know, is not always that easy. And it's not always something that you necessarily want to do. If they have pluses or you're economically dependent or, interdependent, or you have kids together, there can be reasons that people stay in a marriage that is forever damaged by a revelation like this, right? And if you feel those reasons for your sister staying are legitimate, then out of loyalty and love for your sister, you can maybe get to a place where you can forgive him. It'll never be what it was, the friendship or your, you know, ability to be comfortable at ease around him. That will never return, and your sister can't ask you for that. But you can then, you know, slap a smile on your face at the next Thanksgiving and stuff this as best you can down the memory hole and never let him within 100,000 miles of your panty drawer ever again.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And I think that's like the part I'm struggling with is like I said, I mean, every time now he's going to come to something, I'm just like, I don't want to interact with him at all. And it really does tear apart our family dynamic. You know, I mean, it's only me and her, the two kids, right, in the family. So, mm-hmm. And then of course,
only,
I mean, my
husband, the only two who are aware of it.
Yes. Well, my husband knows. And mm-hmm. I mean, obviously he knows. So yeah, it's the four of us,
well, that's
that are kind
be,
of trying to like,
it's know. Just going to be a strained relationship. It's never going to be what it was. You're yeah. never going to be 100% comfortable around him. You should limit your exposure and then, you know, confront him. I think you should confront him face to face, demand an apology. And okay. I think confront him with, you know, first you lied, then you basically tried to shift all responsibility onto me as if somehow I had fucked you and therefore you had a right to steal my panties. Therefore, it's understandable that you would do this or permissible. Mm-hmm. And that's not true. And I need you to acknowledge that. And then I will smile and nod. You will smile and nod. But that is the extent of our relationship. There are strained relationships in every family. There are, you know, brothers-in-law, sisters-in-law, relatives, uncles, cousins, where it's just obvious to everyone in the room that that relationship soured between that person and one other person. And there's nothing that can be done about it. And so you don't try and you try not to focus on it and you step around it. And that's how you keep the peace in a large extended family where someone shit the bed in a spectacular way. And for whatever reason, that person isn't being exiled or divorced or chucked out or excluded. But you have to be okay with that. I hope this doesn't end up poisoning your relationship with your sister, where you don't feel not just violated by what her husband did, but then violated by what your sister is asking you to do. And you need some clarity from her about exactly what she's asking for. If she's asking for you mm-hmm. to tolerate him, you can maybe do that. If she's asking for you to embrace him and act like this didn't happen, you can't do that. And she shouldn't ask you to do that. That would make what she's asking also a violation.
I mean, she is respectful of my boundaries. She asked me, like, can I invite my husband? And I will, you know, typically kind of make a face and just say like, well, like if you want to, or, you know, I guess like, so then that's when she had asked me, like, can't you just be the bigger person and forgive him?
Right. There could be a line though, between her standing with him and her taking his side, that she's obviously sticking yeah. with him. She's staying in the marriage mm-hmm. and she's making whatever compromises that she needs to make to stay in the marriage. She has managed to forgive him. So you just need to decide for yourself and communicate to your sister what you're willing to tolerate, what you're not willing to tolerate. And, you know, it's never going to go back to what it was. And your sister can't ask you to pretend. She can ask you to put up with him. She can ask you to interact with him, perhaps in a very minimal way. And maybe you can do mm-hmm. that for her. But he has to fucking apologize and take some responsibility first. And it doesn't sound like he really has. A tossed off text message that you don't even know for sure he sent to you. Maybe your sister grabbed his phone. Doesn't cut it.
Yeah.
Good luck.
For sure. Yeah. Okay.
Well, thank you for calling.
Thanks, Dan. I appreciate the call. Yeah. You help me. I'll just talk to my sister.
Good luck.
All right.
Bye.
Thank you.
Hey, so this is kind of a weird situation I found myself in, and I'm wondering if this has happened to other people, but I'm still on apps, I guess, out of futility, I don't know. And recently somebody liked me on a dating app who I had actually met before, like just a month before quarantine back in February. And he was part of this like very small group setting because we had a mutual friend in common. And we talked for maybe 2 hours in this small group setting. And so when he liked me on this dating app, I matched with him and I said, oh my God, like, I know you, I met you a couple of months ago. And then he had no memory of me and said he had no memory of me. And then I kind of reminded him of like which bar I had met him at and which friend we had in common. And he still like claimed to not recognize faces or remember anything, or I guess have like short-term memory loss. I have no idea. And then I asked a mutual friend about it who said, no, he doesn't have face blindness, but he's kind of an odd guy. And then also this person is an agent in Hollywood. And I just feel like if you're an agent in Hollywood, like you have to be really good with remembering people and knowing who they are. And so I just want to know, like, was I negged? Like, I feel like it's such a strange thing to like somebody's profile who you've met before and then genuinely not remember them. So I, like, how could I be that forgettable?
Are you into this guy? You had that conversation with him for a couple of hours in the bar. You matched with him on the dating app. Is there some interest here? Okay. Are you going to let your ego get in the way of that? He may have face blindness. Some people have milder cases of face blindness. He may have been drunk off his ass in that bar. It may have been dark in that bar. It's also possible that your photos that you have on your dating app or that you use on dating apps don't quite capture your essence. They're not necessarily representative. I'm not suggesting that they're misleading in any way, but maybe your pics, you know, we pick pics for apps that sometimes people, when they meet us, are like, oh, you don't look quite like your pics. That can be a positive. That can be a negative. Some people very manipulatively pick, you know, 20-year-old pics to put on dating apps, or pics when they were much slimmer or much larger, depending on the preference of the person they're attempting to attract, and can be misleading in that way. Our photos on dating apps can be misleading. It's also, it could just be innocent. And despite being an agent in Hollywood, and agents in Hollywood tend to be people who remember people, perhaps that's not one of his skills as an agent in Hollywood. Maybe he has other agent in Hollywood skills that are more highly refined than that particular one. You know, they say that politicians, it makes a good politician, like Bill Clinton, if he remembers everybody they ever met, remembers their name as well. And while that's a skill that really benefits a politician, not all politicians have it, not to Bill Clinton's extent, which is why people talk about Bill Clinton having that particular superpower. Maybe this agent doesn't have that particular agent in Hollywood superpower. So instead of being wounded, instead of assuming he's negging you or reading an insult into what could just be an innocent misunderstanding, it was dark that night in the bar, maybe he had a little too much to drink that night in the bar, doesn't remember much, or maybe your photos don't quite capture your essence, meet with him. And then after you meet with him, perhaps go on a date with him, you did match, if there's mutual interest, this will become, you know, a funny story about your relationship origin, your funny, amusing anecdote about how you met and then had to re-meet each other and had to remind him who you were and that he had already met you. And ha, 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 your friends will tell this story at your wedding if it all works out. All right, before we get to response calls, let's read the tweets. Kendra Holiday tweets, I'm a sex worker. Despite you advising against it, Dan, I thought I would try having some masked sessions with my clients. To find out what happened, to find out how those masked sessions went for Kendra Holiday, go to Kendra's blog, thebeautifulkind.com, and read the post titled, Trump, the biggest cock block of all time. Thank you, Kendra. SMG tweets, catching up on the Savage Lovecast Magnum episodes now that I'm back at work. Regarding episode 715, good sex can dilate your cervix, suck out some uterine lining, and jumpstart your period, as told to me by an awesome nurse practitioner at #PlannedParenthood. The more you know. Thank you for sharing, SMG. Rhymes with Quiche has also been catching up on old shows, and she tweets, listening to episodes of #SavageLovecast I was too depressed to listen to early in quarantine, and all I can think now is, well, at least this girl doesn't have to wear a hot dog costume to that wedding. I think about that hot dog girl all the time. She was the woman in episode 698, that is 21 episodes ago, for those of you who are marking time in quarantine by Lovecasts. She was this woman who was invited to a wedding where all the guests had to wear costumes that they had submitted for pre-approval to the bride. That wedding was canceled, along with some other weddings that guests were no doubt relieved to learn were canceled. But lots of lovely weddings for cool, lovely, chill people, the kind of people who don't care what you wear to their wedding so long as you're there. Their weddings also got canceled. The hot dog wedding couple can go fuck themselves, but to all the cool, chill couples out there who've had to postpone or scale back your weddings, my heart really does go out to you. But I know, since you're cool and chill, you were able to roll with it. And that ability, the ability to roll with it, that is going to serve you well during your married lives. And finally, a big thank you to Sophie, who turned her sister Amelia onto the Savage Lovecast in December. Sophie and Amelia, sisters, took a trip to Europe not too long ago, right before everything shut down, back when trips to Europe were something we could do. And they passed the time on a long flight listening to the Lovecast together, and now Amelia is addicted, just like Sophie. To see Amelia's Savage Lovecast fan art, check out her Instagram account at sensitive.cactus. And now your response calls.
Hi, Dan. I was just listening to the Love is Not Tourism call on episode 718, and the amazing privilege behind this complaint is flooring me. These countries are not allowing Americans in for a very good public health reason. The virus doesn't care if you're coming there for a relationship or if you're coming there for tourism. Either way, you could be bringing it in. Versus our current policies in the U.S. that have been separating families for quite a while now, don't have a great public health reason, don't have a great anything behind them. And I don't think we're pouring half the energy into reuniting those families as we are into making sure that Americans get to Europe to see their boyfriends. So I know it's not one or the other, but holy cow, I feel like we're pretty hypocritical as a country right now if we expect to be able to go places that are barring us for a great reason, and yet we're still separating families right and left.
Hi, this is in response to 718. I'm just calling to say that, you know, I was making saute in the kitchen and I was watching the cheese bubble and I got aroused. And I got to say, it reminded me of Emily Nagoski's stats that females have a higher chance of arousal non-concordance, like 10%, where it correlates with physical arousal and stimulus arousal, where you get the physical response, but it's not actually what you want or what you're aroused by, whereas men have like a 50-50, which is a much higher correlation. So I suppose that a lot of physical reaction in women could be just from simple satisfaction. So you're fine, girl.
Hey, Dan, I'm calling in response to the woman that was ashamed of being turned on by ice cream. Well, just the other day, I was shirtless, and I went to plug in my cell phone, and I dropped the plug cord, and it whipped me in the nipple pretty hard. And honestly, I was a little turned on. I've never been into BDSM, so I would just say, if something like that happens, just enjoy it.
And we're going to leave it there. 206-302-2064 is the number here at the Savage Lovecast. If you'd like to leave a question or comment for a future show, give us a buzz. 206-302-2064. Better yet, use the voice memo app on your phone to record your question. It's better sound quality. And email it to us at voicemail@savagelovecast.com. Give the gift of the Savage Lovecast to someone you know, someone you love, whose name might be Amelia, really enjoys the Savage Lovecast. You can give them the Magnum. Twice as much Savage Lovecast, more guests, more calls, no ads. Subscribe and gift subscriptions at savagelovecast.com. Follow me on Twitter at @FakeDanSavage. Follow Mistress Velvet on Twitter at @MissVChicago. You can find her website at miss-velvet.com. Savage Lovecast is produced every week by Nancy Hartunian and me and the tech savvy at Risk Youth and Nancy. We'll all be back at you next week for an installment of the Savage Lovecast. Thank you for joining.